Good evening, Little Saigon, Seattle, places on the East Coast and the West Coast, various island chains out in the Pacific. Good evening to all of you here on Earth and those of you traveling at nearly the speed of light somewhere beyond the Earth. It is October the 20th, 2019, and I know I have been remiss in podcasting the last couple days. I will freely admit to that shit on the table, totally remiss in the podcasting. Been kind of in a shitty place. I even got to such a shitty place this weekend. Ugh, and it's not, I'm not proud of it. I went ahead and trolled Zero Hedge. I kind of love to see people respond to shit, and I saw another one of these Tulsi Gabbard articles. Tulsi Gabbard, the magical surfer from Hawaii. Tulsi Gabbard, who will save the Democratic Party. And, you know, Hillary's beating up on her, which is such a fucking original thing. Not at all cliche. Not at all something you might have seen her do against Obama in 2008. Also from Hawaii. But I'll save that topic for later. It is October the 20th, 2019. It is almost 8 p.m. here in Seattle, Washington. That's 2000 hours for those of you in the Queensly Navy and all the Queensly Armed Forces around the world defending freedom by blowing people up and stealing their shit. I received a message from my nephew. My nephew joined the United States Navy and was sent for high-tech training to work on the complexities of those engines and technologies that powered the great ships of the United States Navy. I'll be as vague as possible. I am proud of him. I am an anarchist, and I have a nephew in the Navy, and I am proud of him. But it turns out he got sheep-dipped. And if you don't know what sheep-dipping is, that's where a person enters the military service, and then some spook from the CIA or the NSA or some fucking dark agency that's one of those 25 or 17 agencies that Hillary Clinton talked about in 2016, all the fucking intelligence agencies. How many do we have now? Do we have 50 intelligence agencies? I don't know. But I don't even think you need one, given what they do. Which is, you know, fuck up the world. That being said, my nephew was sheep-dipped into what is called the Secret Space Program. Now, if you don't know what the Secret Space Program is, it is a space program involving super technology, way beyond anything you can possibly imagine, that is currently housed at Area 51. Really advanced shit. They're building hyperlight starships, that TR-3B or whatever. All kinds of hyperlight starships using anti-gravity and quantum stealth and synthetic gravity and the electric field drive, you fuck. And even that Glockenspiel or that fucking Bell project from World War II where the fucking Nazis built that fucking Bell and they harvest the magic of rotating plasmas. Yes, they build starships there, and my nephew was sheep-dipped. He was selected because he's so awesome. You know, anybody related to me is going to be that fucking cool. He was pulled aside, and he said, do you want to join the Secret Space Program? It'll be awesome. You will learn to understand the secrets of the universe. And when your mission is complete, we will pay you a lot of money. And we will wipe your brain of all your memories, and we will replace them with some really cool memories of beautiful women in exotic places right here on Earth, in the regular Navy. While in reality, you will have been in space for 25 years, fighting battles beyond the stars that only humans can dream about after they've smoked some weed and watched Star Wars. Thank you. So yeah, I got a message from my nephew. It was received through a quantum tunneling system. It was installed secretly inside of my consciousness by the cybernetic supermachines of Demblick 12. My nephew took his first paycheck and bought me this insert. He has a sense of humor because even though they didn't have to go through the anus to install it, they still did. If you ever saw Star Trek The Wrath of Khan and that fucking nasty-ass slug monster with the pincers that Khan stuck in the ears of the fucking whatever, the African-American captain and fucking, I don't know, I always forget that Russian guy, Chekhov. That's what this quantum tunneling receiver system is like inside of my brain. It's a worm that turns and twists and churns, and I receive the consciousness of deep space, usually at 2 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. But I am able to translate this into something that you can hear utilizing my own special technology. And I'd like you to hear the message from my nephew because it's of interest given current events. You know, our pirate armies are currently, maybe, kinda, sorta, leaving Syria, except for the oil fields. We have to keep the oil fields. What kind of pirates would we be if we gave up the fucking oil fields? Here's the message from my nephew.
Yo. Shit. Uncle Tom. This is your nephew contacting you from Zeta Reticuli 546. The war against the pirates is going badly. Well, in part because, Uncle Tom, we were the pirates. Shit. We were always the pirates. Fuck. Orgosian Queen has declared our Queensly Navy a rogue force in Quadrant 23. This is bullshit, Uncle Tom. Even Beans would know this is bullshit. And he's kind of a dog, Uncle Tom. A French bulldog fuckhead. Fuck Beans. I miss him. Our starship, the Bishop of Vagina, is currently running on emergency power. We are still 7 light-years from Earth. But I promised Mom I'd be home for Christmas. So fuck it. I'm getting back somehow. Of course, my body is safe and sound in a canister back on Earth. At Area 67. But we have to be within 1 light-year of Earth to transmit consciousness. Our batteries are running low. It's possible I end up a space ghost, Uncle Tom. A fucking space ghost. Haunting deep space for all time. Our way to Dromulac 9. This is a nasty planet, ruled by super advanced French bulldogs. Beans would love it there. They ferment and drink their own poop and vomit. It's quite nice, they say. Uncle Tom. Tell my mom, and my sister, and my dad that I miss them. I will try to fix the main reactor, so I can be back safe and sound for Christmas. But we are still so far away. and we are being chased by the space navies of three planets. Clearly we still make friends in space the way we did on Earth. Fuck. Fuck. I really need to fix the reactor. Maybe we can get parts from those Frenchies. Your dearest nephew, First Princelet of our Queen's Queensly Navy, First Officer of Reactor Maintenance and Food Preparation, and Intergalactic Police Troop of the Lost Pirate Navies of Earth. Peace out, shit.
So that was my nephew, who I believe will make it home for Christmas. I know that that message was difficult to hear. It was downloaded from my consciousness, from the mind worm. And so it's a little bit messy, but here's the gist of it. It turns out that instead of fighting the pirates in deep space, and I know this is a shocker. It's a total fucking shocker, right? Like, this is the plot twist. But it turns out that the United States Secret Space Force, instead of actually helping people and spreading freedom and dignity, actually goes around the universe stealing helium-3 mines and staging attacks on planets. And you remember that whole, what was it, the Prime Directive? You remember the Prime Directive from Star Trek? Well, it turns out the Secret Space Navy of the world, of the Earth, it has the opposite directive. It's kind of like when Captain Kirk and Spock and some of our favorite characters go to the alternate universe, the upside-down, sideways universe of Star Trek, and they meet evil Spock, and there's that Tantalus device. It's kind of like that. We're not actually spreading freedom. We're not actually helping out the people of other planets. We're more like the evil Star Trek Enterprise Space Pirate Navy. And it turns out that in space, as on Earth, you know, if we learned, that when you go around pissing off the universe, eventually they come after you. So, my nephew's consciousness, not his body is in a canister at Area 67, a top secret facility 10,000 feet below the surface of Utah. Or plusy minusy, maybe it's 5,000 feet. The point is, it's a shitload down, maybe a mile down in the Earth, Area 67. His canister, that's where his body is. But his consciousness was transmitted to the Bishop of Vagina, one of our starships in the Queensly Navy of the Secret Space Program. So his consciousness is out there, and if he can't download, and you know, if he doesn't get within 1 light year of Earth, he can't download, and he's still 7 light years away. Now, it turns out there is a species of advanced French bulldogs on Gromulac. And if they can make it to Gromulac, they might be able to trade. Now, what they're probably going to learn in the next episode, and I need to fix the audio on this clearly, they're going to learn that, you know, nothing's free. Nothing's free. And those French bulldogs are bastards. They're bastards about their fermented vomit and their fermented poop. That all they do all day is drink fermented vomit and poop and eat and poop more. It's terrible. Gromulac. But that's where they're going to go to get parts for the reactor. So the spaceship can get within 1 light year, so my nephew can download and be home for fucking Christmas. First topic. Y'all remember that famous Churchill quote, that everybody loves a quote to make themselves feel better about, you know, dropping two atom bombs on Japan. You know that famous Churchill quote where he says, democracy, what is it? Democracy is the worst form of government. He says democracy is the worst form of government, excepting all others. And a lot of you will parrot that fucking quote and never really think about it. Because you ought to think about it. He's actually, I don't know if this was on purpose, whether it was some fucking Freemason bullshit. But he actually revealed a lot of truth there. This is what he said. He said, democracy is shit. Democracy is crap. Even if democracy worked, which it doesn't, it would still result in just a kind of mob rule. So it's terrible, terrible shit. It's bullshit. But every other form of government is as bad or worse. What that basically says is all government sucks. You know, Churchill could have saved a lot of language. He could have been a good little Oxford boy and been a bit more parsimonious. I don't know if he went to Oxford. But the point is, that whole Churchill quote, democracy is the worst form of government excepting all others, it's a simpler quote. Churchill, you could have saved yourself time. Government sucks! Exclamation mark. That's the quote. Don't need to say all that bullshit about how democracy is the worst form, but all others are worse. That's a kind of weird Masonic triple speak. Just tell it like it is, Churchill. Government sucks. Now, why am I going off on this? Because in recent days, there's been a pattern of articles on Zero Hedge that I find a bit disturbing, only because it's just too fucking obvious. And the general pattern is this. These are articles that are professing how magnificent, how amazing, how anti-war, which is funny because this person still hasn't resigned their commission, how anti-war Tulsi Gabbard is. Tulsi Gabbard is perfect. Ignore the fact that she's part of the Council on Foreign Relations. Ignore the fact that she has a very shady history, just like fucking Obama. She comes from nowhere. Ignore the fact that she looks like she was manufactured the way you build a boy band. Which means you pull together two or three marketing think tanks, and you have a bunch of focus groups. And you literally construct something, a boy band, some band, that will attract the highest number of teenage girls between the age of 13 and 18, okay? The same kind of fucking marketing, you know, marketing public relations science that applies to creating a boy band applies to creating a presidential candidate that's going to be president. I'm sorry, you know, and we can all just joke and say, well, yes, they're all actors. Well, they are all actors. They're hired actors. That is their only role, okay? Their only role in life is to read a script. It's why, when you see any of these people off script, they usually stumble. They stumble a lot. And it's not because they're necessarily stupid, but because when you're playing a character by the script and you go off script, you better be good at improv. And not all actors are good at improv. They really aren't. Some are, and some are just shitty. So sometimes you would see Obama back in the day, he would be off the teleprompter, and frankly, he didn't sound that great. So I don't know what to think of this whole situation in general, but there have been all these articles just lauding Tulsi, and then also highlighting this dispute, this fight, this fucking grudge match that looks a lot like the World Wrestling Federation between Hillary and Tulsi. And yeah, the World Wrestling Federation. That's how real I think this is. Some of you folks actually think that Hillary was supposed to win or intended to win, or it was even the plan for her to win in 2016, and I think that's so fucking cute. Okay? That was never the plan. Her whole purpose in life is completely different than that. She was never going to be president, but she did serve a purpose for blocking people. She certainly did block others who might have done a better job against Trump. So if you assume the system works, which I don't, but let's say you're one of these freaks who actually votes and believes the system works. The purpose of Hillary Rodham Clinton in 2016 was to simply block any other potential candidate who might have garnered enough votes. That's it. She was never supposed to win. And if any of you were working for her back then, believing she was supposed to win, you're very, very deeply confused. So, today and yesterday, mostly today, but yesterday too, actually, I went on Zero Hedge and I kind of trolled a lot of people on Tulsi Gabbard, because there's a lot of fucking these fucking comments that just, that she's so fucking perfect. It reminds me of 2008. It reminds me of all the shit I heard about Obama, that most of which turned out to be bullshit. And it was all, oh, he's so amazing, and he's anti-war. Obama's anti-war. No, he's not anti-war. Okay, he basically destabilized Libya. He used, and yeah, he did it more covertly, but he destabilized Libya. He used covert forces to destroy a legitimate government, and he turned Libya into a slave rape zone. Okay, and that's just one example of Obama, you know, being anti-war. Libya, he pushed Libya into a state of civil war. Oh, wow, that's really great, fucking Obama. Do we want to talk about Syria? That fucking nutshell? Do we want to talk about the fact that in 2014, suddenly this fucking terrorist group called ISIS magicked itself into fucking existence, and it had a bunch of shiny new fucking M16A2s and AR-15s and Toyota pickups with M2 50 caliber machine guns mounted, which, oh, by the way, if you're going to mount a 50 cal on a Toyota 4x4, you better know what the fuck you're doing. For those of you that have never fired a 50 caliber machine gun, FYI, it was developed during World War I as one of the first anti-tank weapons. So it has a bit of a kick, okay? So if you're going to mount one on a fucking Toyota, you better know what the fuck you're doing. All of those things were ridiculous. All of it was bullshit. You want to tell me Obama was anti-war? He toppled the government of Ukraine using the CIA and NGOs. He pushed the world closer to war with Russia. He put more military forces on the Russian border, okay? Under 12 hours, drive hours. Under 12 driving hours from Moscow. The Russians lost 20 million people in World War II. To even conceive of pushing NATO as far east as Obama, the peacemaker, did, yeah, not only was it stupid, it pushed the world closer to war. And don't get me started on this Crimea bullshit, okay? Crimea has been Russian for a very long time. And it's certainly more Russian than Puerto Rico, fucking Hawaii. I mean, get real, folks. Here's the thing, guys. I look at Tulsi Gabbard, and I see somebody that was structured, that was put together. She joined the military after 9/11. Some of you might think, wow, that's really positive. Folks, I have way more respect for every officer that resigned their fucking commission on 9/12. Okay, assuming they weren't stop-lost and then put someplace when they would, where they, you know, they would certainly die within a fucking year. That's probably what happened to some of these people. I always forget the name, but there was a professional football player. He went into the Ranger Battalion after 9/11. Oh. Let's see. Can we ask Eric Schmidt about this guy? Pro football Ranger dead. Afghanistan. Pat Tillman. Wow. It actually worked this time. You know, that's one they're going to bury at some point, Pat Tillman. Pat Tillman joined the fucking Rangers. He joined the Army. He went in after 9/11. He believed the story. And I got to tell you, folks, I believe the story too. Okay, the first 5 years after 9/11, I was more or less still in that world of, I could not believe my government could be this terrible. And look how smart I was. I watched that bullshit show on Showtime with Penn and Teller. I saw that really sarcastic fucking South Park, you know, the one where they showed the Hardy Boys looking for fucking clues to 9/11. It took me about 5 years to accept the possibility that everything I thought about 9/11 was bullshit. And I'm at the point now where I can't imagine why I was deluded for more than 5 minutes, given the fact that the proof was obvious to anybody that understood anything about engineering, that knew anything about the history of modern, you know, modern building construction, would tell you that these were controlled demolitions. They were obviously controlled demolitions. There is no question about it. They don't fit remotely into a pattern of, oh, the fucking metal, the fucking steel beams melted instantaneously. That actually never happens. It doesn't happen. And systems that fail because of a fracture fail towards the fracture, and gravity takes care of the rest, which means buildings don't collapse on themselves naturally. They collapse sideways. If a steel frame building even gets into a position of collapse, which has never fucking happened, they sag. They don't fall over even. They simply sag. The bottom line is we all should have known it was bullshit. Pat Tillman went in and Pat Tillman was killed. And I think there was more than one fucking person after 9/11 that chose to follow their conscience. You know, their conscience. They chose to follow their principles. And on 9/12, you know, on 9/12, they resigned their commissions. And probably on 9/13, they were stopped, lost, and sent someplace where their likelihood of survival was nearly zero. There were probably people. I don't know how we would figure this out, because I know how the military works with records. You know, it's funny with the military. They always want you to have your records. And I think the reason why is they're usually busy destroying them. Okay, if you've ever had to deal with the VA or deal with the military, you learn very quickly that the military conveniently loses records. They conveniently have floods. They conveniently have planes magically hit parts of the Pentagon that contain records that deal with, I don't know, a few trillion missing from the DoD budget. But that's just magical. Magical bullshit. I'm going off on this rant about Obama because so many of you believed bullshit about him when he was running in 2008. So many of you believed he would go after the bankers and after finance. He did the fucking opposite. He firewalled the bankers. He firewalled the people that nearly destroyed the world. He did worse. He turned them into fucking heroes. Little Timmy Geithner? Ben Bernanke? Saved the fucking world? These pieces of shit guaranteed that the next time this system seizes up, the world will probably burn. That's how Obama fixed the economy. So you tell me about Tulsi Gabbard. You tell me she's so fucking amazing. What has she done? It looks like almost immediately after she got done with college, she ran for office. Ask me how much I respect that bullshit. It looks like she joined the military to add to her fucking resume of governance. It does not look like she joined for any other fucking reason. And if she was truly anti-war, if she was truly opposed to these fucking illegal wars, and they are illegal, assuming there's a rule of law, which there isn't, I'm smart enough as an anarchist to know that the crocodile's fucking clever. That's why he hires lawyers. The crocodile has lawyers to convince you that sideways is right ways, upside down is front side forward. The crocodile has plenty of lawyers to convince you that 1 and 1 equals 7. My instincts tell me two things today. And again, you can think of this as a prediction or not. I'm going to switch topics here in a second. My instincts tell me two fucking things right now. Number one, Tulsi Gabbard is a 100% manufactured candidate. She's too fucking perfect. She really is. There are too many things about her fucking resume that look too fucking good. And you could say, well, Dan, that just sounds like you're being fucking paranoid. No. Right now, she looks like Obama did in 2008. Just wait until somebody digs deeper. I think you're going to probably find out a few things. The fact that she's connected to the CFR, this is a problem. Here's another thing, too. If she is so anti-war, why hasn't she? I know I keep hitting this, but why hasn't she resigned her commission? So she looks completely put together. She looks like a boy band candidate, just like Obama, and frankly, just like Trump. Except for Trump wasn't really a secret. Everybody should have known he was a fucking actor. He was a fucking TV role player. He's actually a great improver. he takes on his role and he plays it quite well. I mean, I don't think they could have hired a better person to play the role he's going to play. So there's two things that I'm going to tell you. Number one, Tulsi's going to win the Democratic primary. She's going to be the Democratic nominee in 2020. She is literally going to be the magical female unifying war hero, Democratic environmentalist, anti-gun candidate for 2020. It's going to be her. And it could be that Andrew Yang ends up being her fucking VP, because I got to tell you, that would be interesting. But I think it's more likely it's Beto. So, yeah, Tulsi Beto. Wow, it even has a ring to it, almost like it was planned. And I will tell you right now, if it's Tulsi Beto versus Trump in 2020, it's irrelevant what the popular vote is. If you people still think your votes are being counted, you're so fucking cute. You're so cute. You still think when you go into that fucking booth, it means something. No, you need to think about the storyline. You see, that was my mistake in 2016 before I became an anarchist. I still thought there were features of the system that kind of worked. None of it works, folks. Your vote never gets counted. Your vote gets rolled up with a lot of other votes, with a lot of plausible deniability, a lot of pseudo-anonymity, and then the number that ends up getting sent up the line has zero to do, nothing to do with the ballots at all, zero, zip, nada. The total aggregation, the final number, has nothing to do with you voting. It's so cute that you think it does, though. It's really fucking cute. If you're one of those people out there, I'm sorry if I sound insulting, but what the fuck? So yeah, my prediction is if it's Tulsi Beto, because of the storyline, that they win. They win in 2020. And in terms of the ultimate storyline of globalism, it's like the next fucking phase. I mean, you know, Trump was designed. He was set up to piss off everybody. Trump was designed to make everybody angry. Okay, period. That is his whole purpose. His purpose was to go into the China shop and knock shit over. Because that way, the people that wanted that, a lot of people did after Obama, they wanted a bull in the China shop, and Trump's kind of been like that. But he also really couldn't be very smart about it, which he hasn't been. He hasn't been. He still is kowtowing to Israel. That's a shitty move. He still kowtows to Saudi Arabia. That's a terribly shitty move if you're anything remotely against being involved in the Persian Gulf or the Middle East. And as far as Syria goes, while it may be true that he's moving troops out of the line of fire, it still looks like we're going to be guarding oil wells in Syria that we're going to keep for our own. That basically means we're going to take chunks of Syria and call it U.S. territory and ring it with mines and machine guns and drones and whatever else we need. Kind of like what Obama did in Libya, by the way, okay? They didn't give a shit about the Libyan people. Hillary Clinton didn't give a shit about the Libyan people when she came up with that plan. There were many reasons for that plan, but ultimately what they wanted was the fucking oil, okay? And that's what they currently protect. They couldn't give a shit about the Libyan people. Next topic. And before I go, if you believe in Tulsi Gabbard because you think she's anti-war, just remember, in 1940, and you can research this yourself, but in 1940, when FDR was running again to be president, he technically ran as an anti-war candidate. He said he was going to keep the U.S. out of the war. Most Americans had a memory of World War I. They realized it was a giant dirtbag enterprise. Most Americans in 1940 didn't want to have anything to do with the bullshit war in Europe at all, period. But while FDR was running as this wonderful anti-war candidate, he was actually planning, coming up with a plan, a way, to get us secretly into World War II. So if you're into Tulsi because you think she's anti-war, please, please, please remember this. Lots of candidates make promises that they break. They do. They do this all the fucking time. It's almost one of the features of being a politician. You know, if you want to be a politician, your promise has to have a half-life of 72 hours. That's reality. So if you're going to listen to her shit and believe it, fine. fine. But she looks like the magical woman, and I think that, yeah, there is right now. I'm not 100%. Right now, I think the odds are that Tulsi Gabbard is inaugurated as the first female president of the United States in 2021. And it's very likely Beto or Andrew Yang will be the VP. And I think that that has a likelihood of roughly 65 to 70%. So no, I'm not a sure thing here. I'm not on this a sure thing yet. We're going to have to wait and see what happens in the springtime. You know, the springtime, once the primaries get going. But actually, yeah, I think that Tulsi, this entire narrative of Hillary attacking her and being kicked out and pushed out of the debates, this is all drama. This is the same shit you get with the World Wrestling Federation. At least there, you kind of have to know it's bullshit, although some people probably don't. It's the same kind of soap opera bullshit. Okay? There had to be a grudge match between Hillary and fucking Tulsi, just like there was between Obama and Hillary back in 2008. Don't you fucking remember? That was part of the fucking theater. And this all the shit about debates and, oh, she's an outsider. No. She's a stealth candidate. That's way different than being an outsider. She's a stealth candidate, just like fucking Obama. I want to know more about Tulsi, but here's a little secret. If I'm right about this, if she is going to be the next president, we won't know shit about her beforehand, just like with Obama. And then when she does get into office, I think free speech, as we know it, is probably going to cease to exist within a few weeks. I mean, whatever's left of it. There's not a lot left. But yeah, if there are people out there thinking they're going to research her like they did Obama, no. The Democrats aren't going to play that game again. They're going to shut down everything. You are going to see whatever's left of free speech shut like a fucking steel door, especially if she picks Andrew Yang as her fucking running mate. I promise you. But it doesn't matter. Beto would be just as bad. They will push through the most radical anti-liberty agenda that you can imagine. And they will do it under the guise of climate change or global warming or protecting transsexuals from degenderfied, transmutated, superhuman Nazis. Anyways, next topic. I keep saying that. Next topic. I don't know. It's almost 40 minutes, so I think I'm going to take a couple topics and move them around. I sometimes do that. I know it's crazy to do that, but it's just what I do. It's crazy, you know. I move topics around sometimes. Sometimes because of relevance, sometimes because of memory or experience, sometimes because I'm just crazy like that and I live within my own quantum tunnel of remarkable impossible juice. FYI, if I sound a bit off on my podcast tonight, there's a real simple explanation. The dark rut that I allowed myself to dig for the last 60 days has to come to an end. I've been in this really shitty place. I've had a terrible sense of the future. I actually did feel better. I don't know if I mentioned this. I probably did, but I'll just mention it again. I got a call this evening from a listener. Somebody who might be, if I'd already said this, I'm sorry for repeating myself, but someone who might come on in the future as a guest, mystery guest, podcast guest, and that could very well happen, but I got a phone call. And it was good. It was good to hear from somebody outside my bubble. It was good to hear from somebody that was basically telling me that, yeah, my podcast helped out. And that, yeah, you know, there's other people out there who kind of see the world for what it is. Even if the only answer we can all come up with at this point is we're being fucking lied to. And I know I go back to that a lot, but folks, I truly don't know. I'm gonna use a phrase, the shape of the world. Now, when I use that phrase, don't assume I'm a flat earther or I'm a globist, or I'm a fucking simulation theorist, or a fucking transcrebulin, we are really a singularity on the butthole of a super black hole fuckhead. The shape of the world, the inherent cosmology of everything, all I know is there's a God. And if God wanted to reshape the world every 15 seconds, God probably could. That's what it means to be the God. If you want to understand what it means to be in charge of the universe, don't go to television. Because if they show you God, he'll either look like some old dude who shows up to give you fucking advice, or he'll be some fucking stoner dude that doesn't give a fuck and has some terrible fucking agendas. And none of those are God. In fact, if you think you can represent God, you're already probably screwing up, because God cannot be represented. It's one of the reasons why Protestants got so pissed off about graven images and all the papist bullshit around shiny bullshit. They didn't want all that fucking shiny bullshit in their church, because you cannot symbolize God. It's impossible. Anyways, I've been in a dark place, and I know that some of you guys out there, like this person who called, probably understand. And some of you may think that I'm, you know, it's maybe on one level you could argue it's depression. The problem is, it hasn't really been depression. It's been more like resignation, or I sometimes describe it as that exhilaration of knowing some storm is about to arrive, like that stillness in the air right before the first thunderclap. It's like that. It's more like that. And I can't call that depression. Hesitation, maybe. Anxiety too, yeah. Exhilaration in the sense of something to be revealed. There's an exhilaration over that. There is something to be revealed. And that revelation, it won't be like 9/11, okay? Whatever eyes I have, they are open. So whatever happens next, it won't be something like 9/11 where I got, you know, juked, where I got sideswiped, where I got clotheslined, like the rest of us, because we could not believe our government could do something that fucking terrible. We should all know by now, there is no limit to what the crocodile, and when I say crocodile, you know what I mean. I mean government. There is no limit to what the crocodile will do. If the crocodile wants to shove a metal object up your grandma's butt at the airport, guess what? The crocodile will do that. If the crocodile wants to arrest a man for feeding homeless people in Florida, guess what? The crocodile will do that, and it will do it 17 times that day if it wants to, in 17 different cities. But I'm working on the better. Anyways, next topic. I saw the Joker. I saw the movie, the film, The Joker, on Friday. And before I get into the specifics of the movie, the ticket cost $14 for a matinee. And I got some I got a small popcorn and a soda. And so the complete total for the whole thing, the small soda, small popcorn, and the matinee ticket was pretty close to $30. 30. Now keep in mind, when I was in college back in the 90s, $30 would have probably taken me to at least two or three matinees. Actually, more than that, probably three matinees and one or two small popcorns, if I can put that in a basis of comparison. The point is, I would have gotten a lot more for that money. I just wanted to mention that. Not that you guys don't notice that too. And when you combine all the fucking propaganda and all the fucking... They show more previews now. It's really more like you're getting juked up front with higher costs at the theater, but they're pushing more paid-for propaganda now, too. So if you show up really early, usually you see the Army, Navy, Air Force hour where they're showing you how cool it is to fly a drone and murder people in Iraq. So I saw The Joker on Friday, and let me say another thing before I get into that. I read this essay on Zero Hedge, by Charles Hugh Smith about the Joker. I think it was Charles Hugh Smith. It could have been somebody else. And he was really, he wrote it in such a way that he was writing like he was a, I don't know, a 65-year-old woman who'd just seen The Exorcist when it came out in the 70s. I'm sorry for saying it that way. I guess it could be a 65-year-old man. But the point is, he wrote it like someone who was so very shocked. It was such a shocking movie. It was written in such a way, I expected a shocking movie. I expected something worse than Clockwork Orange. And if you've never seen Kubrick's Clockwork Orange, you really should see this movie. Because this movie is shocking. A Clockwork Orange is shocking and way closer to what's going on in America today than anything in that fucking Joker movie. Okay, I'm going to say that up front. I expected shocking. I was not shocked. If you think some dude killing a famous dude on TV is shocking, yes, it's kind of shocking. Watch A Clockwork Orange. Okay? There's at least three rapes in that movie. And they're not rapes that are that hidden. They're not like, oh, there's a rape happening, the door's closed. So in terms of the shocking, you know, this dude, I couldn't believe it. It's almost like, I think the people at the top are beginning to project their desired catastrophe, which means that they kind of know the shit's going to hit the fan. They kind of know people are really pissed off. They're beginning to project their ideal, you know, Teotihuacan, their ideal apocalypse. And to me, the Joker is a kind of ideal because at the end of the movie, the Joker does end up in the asylum. Ultimately, how many people does he kill himself? Well, let's see. He kills those three dudes on the train. He kills his mom. He kills that dude on TV. That's five. And then I guess you could argue that he led those cops into a mob. Maybe they got killed. At most, you could probably pin five murders on him. You know, in A Clockwork Orange, you get the sense that these dudes, the movie starts out, these dudes are already a thug gang. They have already gone around killing and murdering. They've already done this. It's already part of the culture. That's way more shocking than, oh my God, Gotham has a rich-poor problem. Gotham has an issue with poverty. It's total bullshit, folks. It's total fucking bullshit. Also, if you've ever seen The King of Comedy, I know there have been some memes about this. Some of the plot of the Joker movie is a lot like The King of Comedy, which, interestingly enough, also has Robert De Niro in it. So that's another interesting feature of the film. The chaos, the riots, the angry mobs, fucking sedate as fuck compared to what's coming. That's the main takeaway. I don't want to spend too much time on the Joker because I kind of feel like, I don't know, maybe I just should emphasize this point. If you're seeing this film thinking it's going to shock you about the future, about all the pent-up anger, about all the people out there that want to kill rich people, you're seeing the wrong goddamn movie. See A Clockwork Orange. Okay, especially if you live in some nice little cottage somewhere out in the countryside, but within, you know, driving distance or walking distance of a city that's going to go to hell, see A Clockwork Orange. Then you'll be scared, then you'll be shocked, and then you'll be a lot closer to the truth. It's almost like The Joker is another one of these movies that's given to people to convince them that what's coming won't be so bad. That's what's funny about the Joker. As bad as it seems, as bad as it looks, it is nothing compared to what is most likely coming. Nothing. Every grocery store in America now is a Potemkin village of stuff that gives you cancer and a lot less fresh produce. Every fucking grocery store is a just-in-time hellhole. Okay? Every grocery store I go to now, they won't sell knives. That's interesting. They used to sell all the stuff you would need to cook with, but they won't sell knives now, not in the fucking QFC at Harvard Market on Broadway. That's one interesting fact. But the other interesting fact is that there are more guards. Like, 10 years ago, I didn't see security guards at grocery stores. it was not a thing. I did not see them. It was not common. Sure, there were probably neighborhoods in really shitty places in the world and in this country where there were security guards at grocery stores, but not in fucking Seattle. And now you go to a grocery store and you got one guard, maybe two, and you got lots of cameras. Because God forbid a hungry person eats tonight. I was talking with my friend, and I think he is a new friend, on the phone tonight, and we were talking about just-in-time, and I know I bring it up, but just-in-time is critical to the story. Everything logistically now is just-in-time, and it's worse than that. Everything is highly centralized, not decentralized. We don't live in a decentralized economy. There's a whole shitload of stuff that you don't make where you live and has to be shipped from someplace fucking specific. That's not decentralized. That's dependency. That's a lot like Stalin's Russia, oh, by the way. Stalin deliberately set up central planning in such a way that every city would depend upon every other city. You wouldn't be able to get everything in your own city. Huh, kind of sounds like America right now, especially when it comes to food. Specifically when it comes to food. If the flow of food stops to any major city at this point, how long do you think it takes for chaos to ensue? You think the Joker is scary? I don't know. I would probably watch Soylent Green. I would watch A Clockwork Orange first, and then I'd watch Soylent Green. And then I would and ignore the issue in Soylent Green of greenhouse effect or whatever, okay? That's not the point. You stack apex predators like we do in cities, it's like releasing a billion fucking Bengal tigers in India. It makes about that much, a city makes about that much fucking sense, at least as far as ecology goes. So the bottom line is this, a city, how can I phrase this? The human being is the number one apex predator on planet Earth, and a city is a pile of apex predators. Who are very clever monkeys, and even once the electricity goes out, we'll know how to form. I mean, we'll know how to do the regressive shit. We'll form thug armies. We'll grab pieces of pipe. And for those of us that have guns, yeah, they'll use those too. You think the Joker's scary? I think that's funny. Charles Hugh Smith, you're so fucking cute. You think that's shocking? You haven't even begun to imagine the madness. Charles Hugh Smith, I wish I could put you in a time machine and take you to Yugoslavia. You know, that country that no longer exists. Back in the early 90s. I could show you shit that would make the Joker look like a G-rated film for kindergartners. If I could put you in that fucking time machine. The Joker's a joke. As far as being predictive of what's coming. Actually, it's not prediction, it's projection. It's what the fucking people in charge would love to be the case. Because at the end of the movie, they are still in charge. You think that that's subversive? Wake the fuck up. Even though this is late in the Little Saigon Report to mention this, I will consider this a next topic, but technically, I need to talk about this. This hour of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by the new Marvel Comics film, Captain Marvel, Cavern of Chaos. In Captain Marvel, Cavern of Chaos, we encounter our hero in a weird kind of loving relationship with Gamora. You know, Gamora from that whatever fucking Guardians of the Galaxy franchise film 2. She's the one that's got the weird antennae. I wonder what she does with those in Gamora. Fucking tripping between the weirdo and Gamora. Anyways, Captain Marvel is tripping with Gamora and the weirdo, but just Gamora, and she gets VD. Captain Marvel in this film gets venereal disease, and Ant-Man, our hero, who is currently acting as a kind of, I don't know, vibrator by Captain Marvel's bed. It's really uncomfortable for him. He's 12 inches tall currently. Anyways, he shrinks down more to find the VD and destroy it. All of this is happening while Captain Marvel is receiving an award for bravery from some fucking LGBTQSRVPXLZL Foundation. Captain Marvel, the Cavern of Chaos, is coming out this Christmas. Captain Marvel, the Cavern of Chaos, is not yet rated, but will probably be PG-13. Yes, Captain Marvel, Cavern of Chaos, will reveal the majesty of the vagina of Captain Marvel as Ant-Man and his team of marvelous leaders and fighters go into her vagina to deal with the fucking VD that Gamora, the fucking, you know, love interest of that dude who flies the spaceship in Guardians of the Galaxy, I don't give a fuck. Anyways, they go into the Cavern of Chaos and they find a great many things that we cannot give away, because we don't want to have a spoiler alert. So please, by all means, if you want to support the Little Saigon Report, take your family to the nearest theater. If you have a family of four, it will probably cost you $55,000. Take your family to the nearest theater and get that popcorn that kind of tastes like, I don't know, cardboard paper covered in axle grease. Take your family to the theater this Christmas to see Captain Marvel: Cavern of Chaos, and find out the truth of what's going on in her vajayjay. Next topic. It's very simple. I do not want to be healthy when I die. Now, that does not mean I want to dwindle in the sense of, you know, so destroy my body that I slowly die of, like, you know, like runaway diabetes where people start losing appendages. I don't want to do that. I don't really want to die slowly of cancer. That would really suck. When I say I don't want to be healthy when I die, I don't want to be somebody who basically didn't do something because they were afraid it was going to kill them. I'm not saying you should eat poison. Although truly, at this point in American history, and this includes the organic bullshit, show me food that isn't poison. Show me food that isn't being polluted by our polluted air and our polluted water. And, oh, by the way, by our nearly destroyed topsoil and polluted topsoil. Show me the food. Show me the fish that you caught from the sea. I don't mean the farm-raised fish that is actually really bad for you and filled with a lot of terrible toxins and fucking steroids and shit and all kinds of fucking hormones. No. I don't mean the fucking farm-raised shit from fucking, I don't know, Norway. Show me the fish you caught that you thought was so great. And if you did catch it and it was tasty, how do you know it was healthy? I think a lot of the food we eat now is poison. And it's a question of how quickly we're dying from it. That's number one. Number two, for the last century, and this is important, Americans have taken food for granted. I mean, we really have. There's probably almost no one left alive today that actually understands what it means to struggle for food. Since World War II, food has been so cheap that even the poorest among us rarely go hungry. It doesn't mean there aren't hungry people or haven't been. It's just really fucking rare. You know, usually associated with people who are so far off the radar, homeless people who are abusing drugs, who don't want to even spend the energy to find a healthy meal. Usually it's, you know, that or something, but it's rare, right? Or it's been rare. If it's been rare or not, I don't think it's going to be rare in the future. I think the era of super cheap food is nearly over. For all the fucking sci-fi bullshit about synthetic crap that can grow in a lab, you need to understand something. The laws of thermodynamics are what they are. And the fact is, there is food that can be made that is expensive at any scale, and it's probably very, very toxic, and then there's food that can be grown. And obviously, there's the in-between bullshit, the hydroponics. But the bottom line is this. The more you get away from the land, the more expensive the food becomes. Okay? It is not cheaper to do this hydroponically. It is not cheaper to do this in a factory. One way or the other. It's either the quality or the quantity. If they give you quantity, they're probably giving you shit, which means food that's going to give you diabetes or cancer. It's going to kill you one way or the other. I think the era of cheap food's almost over. It's one of the reasons why I don't stress out about losing weight. But, like I said, I don't want to be healthy when I die. I also don't want to be so incapacitated by bad health that I can't be enjoying myself before I die. And so it's an interesting tension. Like, for me, it's like, I should start exercising. And I have no excuse not to. Unless, of course, we acknowledge the possibility that Dane Wigington's right about the whole geoengineering, then basically going outside and just spending all day breathing the shit in is probably really bad for you. But let's assume that he's, you know, maybe he's not right. I don't know. That's truly a tough issue for me. I should probably be out there exercising. I should be out there walking. I should be doing it, but I haven't been. I don't want to be healthy when I die. I don't. I don't want someone to tell me, you know, Dan, I don't want anyone to say after I'm dead, he was in such good physical shape when he died. I want to use up every ounce of life before it's gone. Last topic, because this is a long in the tooth podcast. I'm a big believer in interesting tests, okay? One of my interesting tests from many years ago had to do with the price of oil. This goes back to 2014 when the price of oil collapsed a bit. I mean, back in 2013, it was up above, I think, I want to say Brent crude was nearly north of 100 a barrel, and WTI was approaching the high 90s, or it may have even been north of 100, actually. And then all of a sudden in 2014, with the magical arrival of ISIS out of nowhere with brand new American-made M16 carbines and brand new Toyota pickups right about the same time, the price of oil collapsed. And I remember telling someone, I said, this is a thought experiment. If the economy improves, because it really hadn't, back in 2014, for all the fucking recovery summer bullshit, all the fucking 2010 Biden going around the country, it's recovery summer. For all that bullshit, by 2014, most people understood there was never a fucking recovery. And that what we were doing was fucking treading water with a lot of fucking paper, a lot of debt, and treading water. Back in 2014, I said the following to somebody. I said, if the price of oil is below $50 a barrel in 5 years, and we have provable 5% GDP growth, then that means, by definition, we have found a replacement for oil. And that's essentially an optimistic scenario. Now, the economy, in my opinion, has not improved, and I think oil is reflecting that. And so, ultimately, there are two sides of that bet, right? There's a situation where the economy doesn't improve and oil prices stay low. Well, that's basically, yeah, that's a result of the fact that the world is not able to afford that oil. Not without a lot more debt. So I'm bringing this up because I have another little thought experiment for you about the near future, especially for those of you who either believe in climate change and global warming being human-caused danger, and for those of you that don't, which is okay. I think in 2012 or 2013, round about there, it could have been 2011, James Hansen, Dr. James Hansen of the University of Washington, and actually kind of famous, in the world of global warming, because famously, I think he was the guy that went before the House of Representatives or the Senate back in 1988 and raised the alarm. I think that's more or less the story. At least tried to raise the alarm for the American people. In 2011, I think, maybe 2012, he wrote a paper on global dimming. What is global dimming? Global dimming results from industrial production pushing aerosols up into the atmosphere. And an aerosol is a particle. And some aerosols absorb energy and absorb light, others reflect it. And it turns out that most of the aerosols, and the bottom line is, even if they absorb it, they still block it. So it turns out that industrial society produces a lot of aerosols, and the aerosols counteract global warming. They actually block the sunlight. Now, I don't want to get into Dane Wigington and geoengineering because that adds a whole nother dimension. But one of the points that James Hansen makes in his paper, I think, or at least others have made based on his paper, is that it also implies that if we ever enter another recession and global production slows down, it also implies that that dimming will decrease, and that also means we will have potentially a rapid increase in the Earth's temperature by maybe even up to a whole degree Celsius. Which for a lot of people say, Dan, what is the big deal if the average temperature on Earth goes up by a whole degree Celsius? Well, it won't be the average everywhere. Some places it'll be quite terrible, like India right now. India is quite terrible from what I've read. Now that could all be bullshit, but from what I've read, the situation as far as temperature is so terrible. There are some places where you just simply slowly die. It gets so hot. You know, where the wet bulb temperature is, I think, in 120 degrees Fahrenheit. These are temperatures where you just simply start dying. Your body cannot maintain homeostasis. You will start dying at those temperatures. And I don't even want to get into the water riots because that's another issue right now. So the point is, if the Earth's temperature goes up by a degree Celsius, it may not seem like a big deal, but it's probably a huge deal. And if you add in what's called the clathrate gun, or the issue of methyl hydrates and other convertible organics in the permafrost of the Arctic Circle, then all of a sudden, the scenario of a recession that reduces global dimming potentially becomes quite disastrous. In fact, Guy McPherson has spoken about this. He's actually spoken about the fact that if there was a recession, that could actually be the beginning of the end. Because without the global dimming, according to Guy McPherson, the Earth would be at least a whole temperature warmer, a whole degree warmer. And I'm sorry I'm flubbing up a bit tonight. Like I said, folks, I haven't been in a good place to podcast the last couple days. Really, really dark. Really bad. Although the phone call today did help a lot. So here's the good news. I think in the next couple of years, we're going to be able to determine whether or not the global dimming, geoengineering, climate change debate is real or just a lot of smoke and mirrors bullshit. Because if James Hansen's paper is correct, and again, we have to assume for this situation to be real, you do have to assume he's right. He could be wrong. But if James Hansen's paper on global dimming is correct, and we are about to enter a period where industrial production slows down significantly, then yeah, that would prove one way or the other. Either that triggers a lot of these positive feedbacks. Again, Guy McPherson says, he's not that vague. I mean, he's a little vague, but he's not that vague. He doesn't believe anything like what we call society will exist in 10 years, and he thinks basically it could be the end in 5. So the next couple of years are going to be really interesting. If you think climate change is bullshit, you're going to see that in the next couple of years. It'll be too fucking obvious if we enter a recession. Again, though, I honestly don't know what a recession is from a depression. To me, it just seems like the plane is crashing faster. That's what a recession from a depression feels like. I don't think we've had that recovery. But whatever we're in, a recession from here is just falling faster. Anyways, once again, I want to remind you, coming out this Christmas at a theater near you, a film of adventure and magic and lesbian tripping in deep space with beautiful women. Maybe even some scissor action. In an uplifting film about a woman's battle to be a superhero and a lesbian at the same time, with some transgender, degenderfied issues inside the brain case. Please take your whole family to see Captain Marvel, Cavern of Chaos. This film will blow your mind. You will see things you couldn't possibly imagine. Unless you're a naval diver. And have a great Sunday.